From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in your mailbox, where your 2020 census form was likely delivered. Have you filled it out, either that paper form or online? Data shows that just 48% of Rochester residents have completed the survey, making the city's response rate one of the worst in the nation. According to the Democrat and Chronicle, Rochester has the country's fourth lowest response rate of any medium or large-sized city. Monroe County as a whole is faring a bit better, with about a 64% response rate. But as local community leaders will tell us, it's not ideal. Accurate census data has real impacts on communities. It determines congressional representation, the allocation of federal dollars for housing aid and education, decisions related to local development projects, and more. This hour, our guests discuss how the digital divide and the pandemic have affected census response rates and the short and long-term impacts of not having accurate census information. In short, why does filling out the census form matter? Our guests this hour, welcome Jeff Baylor, New York Regional Director for the U.S. Census Bureau. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I look forward to our conversation.
All right, very good. Anna List is Director of the Monroe County Department of Planning and Development and Executive Director of the Monroe County IDA and IDC. Anna, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Miguel Melendez is Chief Community Engagement Officer for Ibero-American Action League. Miguel, welcome back to the program.
Here.
And Simeon Bannister, member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group and Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Simeon, welcome back to the program to you.
Good to be back with you, Evan.
Jeff, are all those stats true? Are we really doing sort of this poorly? Maybe that's not a fair way to describe it here, because we are going to talk about inequality. We're going to talk about digital divides and opportunity, and I get that. But just in terms of raw numbers, are we really that far down the list when it comes to response rate so far, Jeff?
Yeah, you're accurate. You know, as of yesterday at 3 o'clock, the latest data we put out, 48.1% is where the city of Rochester is at, compared to the final self-response rate in 2010. And I want to say final is 61.4%. And the great thing is the fight's not over yet. We're not even close to being done with ensuring every household throughout the city gets counted.
What's the deadline for you?
So the deadline right now is October 31st.
October 31st.
2020census.gov. They can call it in over a toll-free telephone number, or they can have it. And we're going to start not...
Hey, Jeff, let me just jump in.
Free address.
Hold on, Jeff. Yeah. Hang there, because I know you're giving good information. Your phone actually flickered in and out for us there. So I want to make sure our connection's good. Why don't we make sure that we've got Jeff locked down tight there, and we'll go back over all of that for listeners. So before we come back to Jeff then, let me just ask our other guests for their thoughts briefly about why this matters, and then we're going to talk about what we can do about it and what this means going forward. Simeon Bannister, 48.1% in the city of Rochester. Why does it matter?
Well, it's absolutely critical. As you said in the open, that the way that resources are distributed is largely on the basis of the census. Those are governmental resources, but Evan, I also bring the perspective of philanthropy, where we depend heavily on the census data in terms of how to distribute resources. So frankly, there's a knock-on effect that happens when communities are short-counted and are deeply, deeply concerned about making sure that we have those numbers, because those numbers represent real dollars that come to our community.
Okay. Miguel Melendez, why does it matter?
Well, the way I look at it, when we say 48.1% right now, what it really means is we're going to get 48% of the resources that we're actually entitled to. And I think when we think about that from that perspective, do we want half of the representation that we deserve? Do we want half of the resources that we deserve? I think the answer is no. And we have to find new and creative ways, especially during COVID and with the digital divide, to make sure that we get as many people counted as quickly as we can. We only have 3 months, really.
Anna List, how do you see it?
Sure. I think two additional points to make are congressional representation, so the number of congressional delegates that we get for the whole state of New York and for Monroe County in this region is determined based on census data. And also, I, coming from the Monroe County Industrial Development Agency, we are highly distressed census tracts as determined in the decennial censuses are eligible for special treatment for certain projects that wouldn't otherwise receive support from the IDA in other parts of the community. So when we don't get a complete count, we miss out on those opportunities.
I don't know that people are often thinking about it in those terms, Anna, thinking about housing, retail, tourism developments.
Right.
I mean, people probably don't think about the census in those terms. Why should they?
Well, because it amounts to private sector investment in communities that otherwise wouldn't be destinations for those types of developments. So hotels, retail stores, tourism destinations, those are projects that if they're located in, say, Pittsford or the higher income sections of Brighton, they wouldn't be eligible for things like sales and use tax exemptions and support for construction costs. But if they were to take place in a lower census tract, or lower income census tract, then they would be eligible for those incentives.
So, Simeon Bannister, one of the things that we've talked about in this program that I think is really, really important to kind of keep a frame of reference here is when you have inequality in a society, but especially at the levels of inequality that this country has, there is a risk that these kinds of developments end up making, you know, the wealthier wealthier and the people who are struggling, you know, who need resources, end up not getting them. And if this number doesn't turn, if we don't get more a sort of a full representation of the census, this could take what is already unequal, and it, at least from what I'm the way I'm reading it here, could make it even more unequal. Is that wrong?
No, that is correct. And I think the tragic irony here is that in many ways, the inequities in our community have left many folks cynical about their participation in things like the census. Because what I've heard from folks and kind of seen even on social media are folks kind of decrying their participation in the census because it doesn't matter or because, you know, the game is rigged. The tragic irony is that by declining to participate, it reinforces those very inequities. And so we really need to get the message out that so many decisions really do rest on accurate data. Listen, when we come on the show and we quote statistics, more times than not, we're talking about census data as we try to understand even some of the inequities that exist in the community. And so it's important that we are working from accurate and complete information. And it's not lost on me that there appear to be some folks that perhaps don't even want us to have a full and complete count for that very reason. And so that ought to be an inspiration enough for us to really focus and make sure that we get every single person counted, certainly in Rochester and beyond.
I have to press you on that. Who and why would somebody not want a full count of the census?
Well, all I can say is that it's not lost on me. I saw reported in the press that in this new legislation, the Census Bureau was pushing for, in the House version of some of the stimulus work, was pushing for an extension for the census for an additional 4 months to make sure that every single person was counted. That was not included in the Senate legislation that has been put forward in the stimulus to respond to COVID-19. And it just seems to me pretty wrongheaded that we wouldn't make sure that we do everything possible to get every person counted. And again, we know that it's essential for dealing with some of the inequities. And so someone once said, qui bono, who stands to benefit? And that's certainly the right question to ask here.
All right, I've got Jeff Baylor back, the New York Regional Director of the U.S. Census Bureau. Let's go down the list of what people need to know about how they can get this thing done first. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, and thank you, and I apologize for the connection issue. So three ways households can self-respond right now, and every household in the city of Rochester can do this. They can go online at 2020census.gov, click on the respond button. You do not need your census ID. You can just click on the link that says you don't have it, key in your address, and then enter in the information for everyone who's living at your home at that particular address or was living there as of April 1st, 2020. The second way is you can call one of our toll-free telephone numbers. For English, it's 844-330-2020. For Spanish, it's 844-468-2020. And provide your information over the phone. Very basic. If you have that questionnaire lying around on your coffee table or hanging on your fridge, please fill it out. Mail it back in. As I was mentioning earlier, we have until October 31st under our proposed schedule. for households to self-respond. But regardless of the day you fill it out, the date that's really important is April 1st. So whether you're filling it out July 29th or August 31st, we're asking you who usually lived or stayed at that address as of April 1st, 2020. So the sooner households can fill it out, the better off we'll be. And then starting next week, we will have census enumerators going door to door, visiting those addresses that have yet to respond to the 2020 census.
There, that work, Jeff, you know, going door to door, how successful does that work tend to be?
Very successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in fact, in 2010, the final self-response rate, again, these are the households that would have filled it out and mailed it back in. In 2020, we say the self-response rate, which is at 48.1%. Those are the households that have either gone online, called it in over the phone, or filled it out on paper and returned it. In 2010, that self-response rate was 66.5%. You know, nationally, we're at 62.6%, and we still have time for households to self-respond. Sometimes in communities, there's language barriers, there's issues with trust, and when they see that it's a neighborhood member who applied and was hired for the census and are out there knocking on doors collecting this information, sometimes that's a great way to get that information. We certainly understand it. We hire people with language skills of the community, people who look like the members of the community, they understand the culture of the community. So we're successful, and we will visit every address that has yet to respond.
Andy writes and says the following, and maybe all of our guests can kind of weigh in on this here. Andy says, I understand that participation in the census can be limited due to mistrust of the government. And that can be true in communities of color or immigrants who are undocumented. Miscommunication can be a big deterrent. But why, he asks, is internet access important? I filled mine out, he says, and I mailed it. Anyone can mail it. Let me go down the list. Let me start with Simeon. We've talked about connectivity here a lot and connected communities. Andy is wondering why internet access is so important in this conversation about the census.
So this is the first census that we can use the internet to reply. The basic premise for doing so was that we wanted to make it easier for folks to apply. We know that there are limitations. That any barrier that we throw in front of folks that are already stressed because of many of the economic challenges that confront folks in our community is yet another way of disrupting the participation in things that are really important, in this case, the census, voting, and there are other examples. And so we want to do everything possible to reduce those barriers. We also want to make sure that folks have that access and connectivity. We've been really grateful at the Community Foundation to be a part of the Monroe County Complete Count Commission and to invest resources and to encourage our philanthropic partners to do the same to try to redress some of these challenges, but they are significant.
Okay. Miguel Melendez, how do you see that connectivity issue affecting this?
Yeah, so I think you could just look at the data. We have four census tracts in the Northeast, 7, 15, 51, and 52, and all four of those census tracts, the response rate via internet is between 12 and 16% right now. And I think, you know, when you look at the COVID issue compounding this, many people are struggling to have internet access for their children at school. So thinking about how that compounds and you know, the census is not going to be on the front of the mind if you're thinking about paying your rent, RD&E bill, and everything else that's going on in your life at the time. So I think it's an access issue. I also think from a communication standpoint, you know, the internet is a good option, but we really need to start pumping out the phone line as an alternative in some of the communities where internet is not always, is really a privilege and not always available to people.
Okay. Annalise, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I was just actually clicking around on the response rates page of the census and looking at New York State at the map, and when you click on internet, the color completely changes. If like on the scale of 0 to 15% being like a dark brown color and 86% to 100 being a dark blue, the state goes from being kind of mostly blue to mostly orange and brown. Here in Monroe County, Our total self-response is 64.7%, which is not far behind the 2010 self-response of 72.7%. But internet, you're looking at 53.9%. And actually, I'm glad we're talking about this because I've actually been having some conversations with Simeon and some other folks in the community about talking about broadband infrastructure as critical infrastructure, just like we think about roads and bridges, and we're really lacking in that regard. Beyond beyond census participation, it also affects, you know, folks are working and learning from home, and that's probably going to become more and more the reality going forward because of COVID, and we really have to address this issue head on and quickly.
Anna, when it comes to broadband and access, you know, certainly my understanding is the reason we have such inequality in terms of access is it's not viewed as a public utility yet, and government would have to spend a lot of money to make it so. And,
right.
You know, Monroe County is like any local government in the country during a pandemic. I mean, I'm sure every single dime is tight. Realistically, what kind of access can we expect to create in the future, and what is the government's role?
The government's role is to change the policies, and that's going to be really hard because we really have our telecom infrastructure is kind of an oligopoly, for lack of a better term, and there are private sector interests in keeping the status quo the status quo. So we need champions at the highest levels in our various levels of government, at the state level, at the federal level, to push for change. And I think this current pandemic is going to be kind of a harbinger for that. This is now is the time for us to really make the ultimate and final push. But I don't see anything changing overnight. This will take a long time, unfortunately.
Yeah, and by the way, Simeon Bannister, I mean, I want to ask you to kind of follow up on his comments there about whether you are truly an optimist, that there is a kind of partnership with government in the future that could end up creating the kind of connectivity that we would like to see as a community.
Yeah, no, I think that there is an opportunity, as Anna kind of referenced. There are a group of us that have been having some conversation about how we can really make this a reality, at least here locally. I think it was Tip O'Neill that said that all politics is local, and we know that many infrastructure decisions are local as well. So I am bullish on our chance to do so. And the reason why I'm bullish on it is because it is absolutely critical. I think what we're seeing it in this conversation about the census, in earlier conversations you and I have had about education, Evan, we can see that the competitive opportunity for this community, particularly as it relates to places around the country, even the world, mm-hmm. is in the extent to which we develop our infrastructure. And the internet and broadband is a huge, huge part of that because our economy and our world is changing. As a community foundation, we have an opportunity, a responsibility rather, to think about the long term, and that's why we're invested in the work and trying to figure out, again, how do we build the right infrastructure for this community to make sure that we have shared opportunity and shared access? Because if we do that, we think that that's the margin for this community's success. And frankly, when we look around the country and we see places that have embraced those kinds of equitable practices, that's the story that we're seeing, is that the folks that have embraced it are the folks that are doing the best economically. Mm.
I guess in many ways, as you said, not surprising. I mean, it is better for sort of competition and what you're trying to create in your community, access to opportunity. And so, Jeff Baylor, when it comes to that connectivity issue, you know, for our listener, Andy, who was maybe confused about why that, given the other opportunities to get the census done, how do you see connectivity impacting this?
Yeah, it certainly is in certain areas, and we understand that. And again, it's one of three ways that households can self-respond. One of the, and I think it should be celebrated where we're at so far, given what COVID-19 has done to communities throughout New York. It's amazing. If you would have told me, you know, that we would be at the rates we are, and we would take probably the most important piece of a census out, and that's the ability for partners like those that are on this call today. They are the trusted voices of the communities in which they represent. You know, and being able to bring them together. Let's say it's at a local library or at a church service on Sunday where we talk about the census, how important it is. And then right afterwards, you provide those resources for those households to fill it out right then and there. the census counting started March 12th. That took away every opportunity we had to do things like that. And just more recently, we're starting to do things like that at food distribution sites, at farmers markets, outdoors. Partners like those on the car are inviting us to bring tablets and those resources to those hardest to count communities. And that's where our focus is going to be, you know, through the end of this data collection period on the 2020 census.
Talking about the census, and if you've got questions or comments on the census, 844-295-TALK to call the program, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You cannot email us right now. I hate talking about connectivity, but our email's been down for almost a day. Is it still the case, Megan Mack? Oh, you can email producer Megan Mack directly. Let's just make that the new show email. mmack@wxxi.org. Sorry, Megan. mmack@wxxi.org. She can get into the email through her producer ways. The rest of us are really struggling. So don't use connections at wxxi.org. Just for this hour, use mmack@wxxi.org if you'd like, or you can call the program. And let me get Jose on the phone first. Go ahead, Jose.
Yes, hello. I have a question. Let's assume that I reported 5 people, say, in my household. But then let's say one of the people moved back to Puerto Rico because we have a large population that travels back and forth. Do I go back in and change my numbers on the census back to 4?
Okay.
That's a great
Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So, again, we're asking who lived at that address, at your address, as of April 1st, 2020. So if that was that person's usual place of residence, if you consider that your home, their usual residence as of April 1st, there's nothing you need to do. In the event where that was not their home and they were actually living in Puerto Rico, and they usually live in Puerto Rico as of April 1st, 2020, what they can do is they can fill out the form there. What you can do is you can submit a second form. You have that ability. You don't have the ability to go in and change anything, but you can submit a second form, and we can take that revised submission from you.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Good luck to you. Listeners, 844-295-TALK. If you have questions about the census, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. It's 263-9994. On the subject of trust, there was a concern that Andy, one of our listeners, raised about communities of color and about maybe immigrants who are not documented, concerned about what this could mean for them, but also a general concern about trust. And, you know, one of the things that I observed in the recent primary election, Simeon, when we look at election trends, it seems to me from the data that I've seen, and I want to see more of it, it seems to me that black voters vote by mail less often or perhaps express more distrust in it. I don't know that that's a fairly fully general comment that, I mean, just looking at some of the data I've seen, I don't know. Number one, is that accurate as you see it? And is there a lack of potential trust when it comes to census, for example?
Yeah. I mean, I think what I want to point out is that the extent to which people, you know, aren't participating is not an irrational, you know, kind of crazy decision when we think about the history of how, you know, our government has engaged people of color, and particularly in this case, black people. Everything from the Tuskegee experiment, which looms large and is, you know, showed up in the participation rates for some of the COVID-19 vaccine trials, all the way up to some of the voter participation. I mean, we have a government that until recently has been clawing back some of the Voting Rights Act, as an example. So it's not an irrational response to say, I want to be a little bit judicious about what information I share, and certainly in the Latinx community, the rhetoric that's come from the federal government around immigration and some of those challenges. Again, it's not an irrational response to be a little bit cautious. I think in this case, what we want to do is, as trusted community voices, point to the fact that the census really is a lockbox that doesn't avail itself to that kind of manipulation, and there are a lot of safeguards that are in place for that, number one. And then there's also the question of risk. So, you know, what I've been saying to friends and colleagues is I get the, you know, degree of caution, but I also want to counterbalance that with the fact that we're going to not have the resources that we need to kind of, you know, bring about the kinds of changes that many of us think are, you know, possible, particularly in a moment like this. And so we're encouraging people to participate in the census. Evan, one thing I do want to point out is that, at least in Rochester, we're spending far more resource trying to make sure that people are aware of the census. I was really fortunate to chair the fundraising committee for the Complete Count Commission. At least in philanthropy, in the 2010 census, the contributions were fairly marginal, but this year we were able to contribute as a philanthropic community several hundred thousand dollars to the effort to get the word out, to do some of the marketing and that kind of thing. And hopefully, in the interest, we try to really be smart about structuring that marketing in a way that really amplified some of those trusted voices to kind of overcome some of the, again, the very rational caution that people bring to the census.
I just have to say, Simeon, this is going to be one of those moments that I will probably remember on this program. We do 500 hours a year, and inevitably there's comments or moments that make you go, wow, why have I never thought about it that way? When you think about who is not responding to the census, sometimes it's a lack of access, but sometimes it's an actual conscious decision. And if there's been decades or centuries of oppression, can you blame people for saying, oh, you want my information now? What are you going to do with this? I mean, I totally understand that. I absolutely do.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I see it, you know, on social media. I see it with some of my friends on social media who, you know, have raised, you know, objections about participating and have, you know, tried to incite other people to be dubious about participating. And again, you know, I don't think that that's crazy because I can see where it comes from. But we've got to, you know, offer an equally compelling rationale for participating, which is, again, that we live in a resource-deprived community. And as a first step, we've got to make sure that the resources are there. Then we've got to have some questions, and we've talked a little bit about this on the show in the past, about how we divvy up those resources more effectively to bring about the kinds of, you know, equitable community that we all want to enjoy.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And sometimes when we think about who's not filling out the census, I mean, I remember Saturday Night Live had a sketch where Tim Meadows was the census worker and Christopher Walken was living in an apartment and hadn't filled out the census. And Tim Meadows is asking him, you know, so how about your citizenship? And Christopher Walken says, well, I have dual citizenship with the United States and Florida. And he gives Tim Meadows, the census worker, a birthday card that says, you just turned 50. Here's a passport to Florida. And Christopher Walken says, look, every time I show up at the border of Florida, I show them the card and they let me in. And, you know, the sketch presents this idea. I mean, it's funny and you feel for the census workers, but the sketch presents the idea that the people who aren't filling out the census just don't get it and are sort of out to lunch, whereas there's a lot of complicated factors that are much more serious. So as much as SNL can riff on that, I think some of the points that Simeon, Miguel, Anna, and Jeff are making here are really, really important to keep in context. And there's still plenty of time. October 31st, a deadline to get this done, different ways to do it as we talk about the census. So let's take our only break of the hour, and our phone lines are jammed now. If you've got questions about the census, this is the time to get them in. So if you're on the line, we will get them to our guests on the other side of this break. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with parents about reopening schools. What do you want for your kids? What do you expect districts to do? What rules are fair? What goes too far? How many days a week should kids be in school? How many hours? We're going to talk about all of the complex problems that have to be solved and what parents want from districts as they get ready to submit those reopening plans. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jeff Baylor is New York Regional Director for the U.S. Census Bureau. Anna List, Director of the Monroe County Department of Planning and Development and Executive Director of the Monroe County IDA and IDC. Miguel Melendez, Chief Community Engagement Officer for the Ibero-American Action League. Simeon Bannister is a member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group and Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Let me get back to your phone calls, of which there are many. Charlene in Penyan is next. Go ahead, Charlene.
My question is the April 4th or the April deadline when a lot of retired folks like myself are not living in New York. I don't want my tax dollars to go to Florida. I want them in New York. So what's the answer?
So the question is, why is it April 1st, as who was living in that residence April 1st? Why does that matter, or why is that the rule of thumb? Is that right?
Kind of like, why is it the rule of thumb when a whole bunch of people are not living in their home state at the time, and the census does not say, is this your primary residence?
I see. Okay, I see. Thank you, Charlene. Jeff, you want to take that?
Yeah, absolutely, and a great question. The census, think of it as we're taking a snapshot of the United States and Puerto Rico, and the date we hit the button to take the picture is April 1st, 2020. It doesn't mean where you're physically at on April 1st, 2020. How it's worded is where you usually live or stay. So if you live 8 months out of the year in New York and you happen to be in Florida on April 1st, 2020, you should be counted in New York, where you usually live or stay. This is a big issue with college students. College students, many who have left prior to getting their invitation in the mail, the week of March 12th, went home, stayed with their families, and finished out the semester virtually. We need to count those students where they usually would have lived or stayed as of April 1st, which is at that off-campus college apartment. So that's the word we're trying to get out. It's where you usually live or stay. So in this example, if you live 8 months out of the year in Rochester and 4 months in Florida, you need to be counted in New York.
Does that help, Charlene? Are you there, Charlene? Oh, we don't have her. Okay. Well, I hope that answered that question. Thank you, Charlene, for that. Let me get Leslie next. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I just have a couple comments. One being that we have quite a community that lives either on Section 8 or get some sort of DHS housing support. And it has been known to me that many people are afraid to do the census because perhaps that puts them at risk of losing their housing if they are in violation of either of those entities. Housing and additional people, you're approved through Section 8 to have three people, but yet there's five, so let's not do it at all. Virtually the same thing for DHS. And then we have this incredibly large homeless population that have been perhaps, within the homeless population, for years, and are not staying more than a few months, perhaps, in any one home or apartment. And how do they get counted? And typically we miss them because their address is constantly changing. That's my comment and thought.
Let me start with Jeff. Thank you for that, Leslie. Jeff?
Yeah, two great questions, Leslie. First off, and Simeon talked about it earlier, the census is really a lockbox with the data we collect. There's a federal law in place, U.S. Code Title 13, that basically protects every piece of data we collect. Under that law, we cannot release information at the person or household level. When we release it, it's at a county level or a city level or a census tract level, never at the person or household level. Local, state, federal law enforcement agencies, local housing authorities, ICE, Homeland Security, IRS, no one can access our data at any time for any reason. Even the Patriot Act does not supersede Title 13. We've been taken to federal court numerous times over the past seven decades. We have won every time. There's never been a breach of Title 13 since its existence in 1954. In addition, everyone who works on a census, even if you work for a four-week operation, take an oath of confidentiality for life, basically stating if you release data at the person or household level, you will be imprisoned up to 5 years, fined up to $250,000. The public's trust is the foundation of getting a complete and accurate count. And the second question regarding the homeless, we have a special operation called, part of our group quarters operation, we called service-based enumeration. Between September 22nd and 24th, we're going to visit every mobile food van, every soup kitchen, every homeless shelter, and work with those administrators or those leaders of those services to determine the best way to count the people they serve. In addition, early morning hours on one of those mornings, 12:01 a.m., we're going to go on and do our homeless count. We're going to visit every site that our partners have provided to us where someone who's experiencing homelessness, if they're not staying in a shelter, like they're in a tent city in the woods, or they sleep beneath an overpass or behind the church, we're going to go visit every one of those sites and conduct a head count of those individuals.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Leslie, thank you for bringing up this issue. And let me ask some of our other guests weigh in. Miguel, anything you want to add there?
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the challenges this time around especially was the citizenship question. There was a point in time when there was some national rhetoric around whether or not we should be asking about citizenship on the census. And because of that, I think it put out some misnomers. And people really, especially in the immigrant or the refugee community, were concerned about why were we asking that question, right? The other thing I would say on a local level, one of the things that we're doing is we're partnering with the Father Tracy Advocacy Center on North Clinton Avenue, who works with a lot of folks who are in the homeless population. We brought some census takers down, census staff down to the avenue to talk to people and make sure that they get counted. So I think there's some direct ways where if you know of populations that need to be served, the census has been accommodating to those needs.
Simeon Bannister, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think the questions are well taken. I think particularly the question with respect to Section 8 and just, again, some of the ways that our system needs to continue to be refined, hopefully as we look forward to even more deep structural change, but to be refined in terms of how it orients itself to the folks that are engaging with the system. If people are living in fear in that way, that even if they report data about their family, that they feel that they might lose this vital resource to provide housing, is something that's deeply problematic, something that we need to be mindful of. And I think evidence is some deeper work that we need to do at some of our agencies to ensure that they're not taking the kinds of actions that increase that level of fearfulness.
Okay. Anything to add, Annalise?
Sure. I'll just quickly touch on the fact that earlier this year, Monroe County and the City of Rochester worked together to identify a number of local nonprofits that we were going to issue state-issued grant dollars to in order to get the word out. So organizations like Refugees Helping Refugees and Catholic Family Center, area libraries, et cetera. Unfortunately, the $20 million that had been allocated by the state to support that outreach was no longer, it's been put on hold because of COVID-19. So ordinarily, those organizations that that support those vulnerable populations and provide unique services, those individuals would, trust the people that they'd be working with at those organizations to give them good information. Those organizations have not been touched by any financial support. So all of the work that we're doing to get the word out is pretty much grassroots, aside from some support for CauseWave, which has done a local media campaign.
All right, listeners, if you want to keep the questions coming, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Next up, we've got Nancy in somewhere. I don't know where Nancy's calling. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. Nancy, you're in Brighton. Yes. There's a lot of people on the board. Go ahead, Nancy.
My question is, what do you do when your daughter works for the Foreign Service and is overseas and has been overseas for a couple of years going to different countries, but mainly would probably go back and live in D.C., but because of the COVID virus, she was sent home in March, and so she was living with me April 1st. So, and I do receive her mail. So would I be counting her for Rochester, or how does she get counted? That's my question.
Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, great question, Nancy. And we do have a whole section on residence criteria is what we call it on our website at 2020census.gov that goes over a variety of situations. And it sounds like in this case, the address that she had to live as of April 1st was at your house. So she should be included because that was her usual place of residence as of April 1st, 2020. So she should be included on your census form.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That's what I did. So I appreciate that.
And thanks for filling it out.
Yeah, Nancy, thank you very much. 844-295-TALK. Mike called a couple times from Penfield, couldn't get through, but wanted to leave a question. Said Jeff says he is back. I'll let Mike ask it. Go ahead, Mike. There you go. Go ahead.
Oh, you hear me?
Yep.
Sure. I know I thought I filled out the census a while back, but I can't remember if I actually submitted it at the end. Would I be in trouble if I went in there and filled it out again?
Jeff Bailey.
Yeah, great question. Not at all. Not at all. We have a way of unduplicating where we get multiple responses for a single address. We have a way of doing that as part of our post-processing, so not a problem at all to go back online and to fill it out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. That's a good one, though, Jeff, for all of us. You'd rather have us fill it out twice than not at all.
Absolutely. Well, let us do the work of unduplicating at the end of the census rather than you worrying about whether or not you submitted it. Just go ahead and submit it again, and we'll take care of it.
All right. Good luck to you, Mike. Thank you for that. Let me get Scott in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just getting into the program. My son is in his mid-20s, not living at home, and I told him he needs to do the census, and he says he's too busy. What would happen to him, or what would happen, period? I'm sure he's not the only one that might be too busy, quote-unquote.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Jeff Bailey, go ahead.
Yeah, so look at, all the great things that Simeon and Anna and Miguel talked about earlier. When you look at what's at stake for the next 10 years, you have representation at every level of government from the number of seats each state has in the U.S. House of Representatives to, voting precincts and school districts drawn by the state to businesses using this data. But think of the 10-year period that your son and things that could happen over the next 10 years. Maybe he has children. When you think about health care for those children, you think about education for those children. This is our once-in-a-decade opportunity to ensure our communities get accurately counted so they get their fair share of federal funding and they get their share of representation. I mean, we need to think about this as like a competition. We don't want other states taking our representation and our funding, so we need to ensure our communities get a complete and accurate count.
Does that help, Scott? You've lost. Are you there, Scott? You want to follow up?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yep. I'm fine with it. I will push him and his friends to do the same thing. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. 844-295-TALK. If you've got questions about the census, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Jan writes in to say, I have entered my information in the census already, but I keep getting postcards, which makes me think I've done something wrong. Is there a way to check to see that, in fact, my household is counted, Jeff?
Yeah, there's no official way to do it, unfortunately. And a lot of times those postcards that we mail out, they've been printed earlier in the census cycle. So it's certainly possible that someone could have filled it out and submitted it, and we had already printed out and started the mailing process for these reminder postcards. You can just ignore it. It's fine. If you're confident that you filled it out online, you're good to go.
There you go, Jen. Hope that helps. We're talking to Jeff Bailey, among other guests. Jeff's the New York Regional Director for the U.S. Census Bureau. Here's a question I think everyone can weigh in on. Herman has a couple of questions. He asks, first, does the Census Bureau have local positions available that don't require walking door to door? And number two, what can people do to encourage more participation in the census, both as volunteers and activists on behalf of the census? So, let's just hit that first question. Does the Census Bureau have local positions available that do not require walking door to door?
The majority of the positions that are available now do require going door-to-door collecting responses. We have an office in Rochester, so there is a possibility that positions may open up as a result of turnover, but the amount of those positions will be very limited. We're also looking at the ability for these door knockers, if we're able to get phone numbers, to be making phone calls. So you don't necessarily have to knock on doors. If we have good, valid phone numbers, we can make phone calls. But the majority of the opportunities that are left on the 2020 census do involve going door-to-door.
Now, I'll start with you, Jeff, and I'd love all of you to weigh in on this one here, because what Herman's really saying here in the second question is, we all want, or I think most people want, to see the census results be very strong. We want to see our community counted for all of the reasons that Anna, Miguel, and Simeon have outlined for us, all of the ways that the census information is going to impact development, who gets help, philanthropy, community support in various ways. Herman is saying, whether it's as volunteers or activists, what can we do to encourage more participation in the census? Jeff Bailey first.
Yeah, everyone is a trusted voice, whether that's to your coworkers, those you worship with, your friends and family, your neighbors. use your voice to just ask your neighbor, have they filled out the census? Let them know how easy it was when you went online, whether on your smartphone or your tablet or on your desktop computer. Let them know how quick it was, how easy it was, that it was very basic information that we're asking. Let them know that we don't ask for citizenship status. We don't ask for Social Security numbers or bank account or credit card information or for money. And let them know what's at stake. You know, I had a member of a community in upstate New York tell me, you know, I think of it as we have a school of 100 kids, and let's say only 80 of those kids get counted in the 2020 census. For the next 10 years, that school is going to get 80% of the funding it deserves. And it doesn't just affect those 20 kids who weren't counted. It affects all 100. So we all have to do our part, use our voice to get the message out there. First off, fill it out if you haven't done it yet, and then talk to everyone you know and ask them to do it if they haven't.
Okay, Simeon Bannister.
Yeah, just as a practical matter, forgive me for being a little flip about it, but next time, listeners, if you have not filled out the census yet, you're in the commode, bring your phone with you, and it literally takes 5 to 10 minutes. If you're scrolling on Facebook or Twitter, and one of those ads pops up, which they invariably will, and you haven't filled it out yet, just click the link and take some of your social media time and just use it to knock it out real quick. It is not an arduous process. It's very straightforward. I also just want to give a tip of the hat to Jeff and their team at the Census, retooling their website to really make it approachable and easy to use, and also a nod to Miguel and to Anna, who really as community leaders have provided the resources of their respective organizations, Ibero and the Monroe County, to really lean in to make this happen. And so, again, as a practical matter, you got the time. It doesn't take long. And let's all knock it out.
This is the realest talk show in the country. We use words like commode around here. And we talk, there's nothing that we will not address, but it's so true. Fast, easy, get it done. Miguel Melendez, what do you say to that?
Yes. So to everyone, I'm speaking to the people here. We have a collective responsibility to participate, to educate, and to inform others about the process. There's phone numbers, obviously there's access online. One of the things I would say to people is if you have access online, you can go to 2020census.gov. There is a response rate map. You can look at your individual neighborhood, see your census tract, and see where you stand right now. And I encourage you to do that. Think about the doors you need to knock on in your own community to make sure our people participate in the process.
Annalise.
Sure. So a number of my colleagues have put the link to the census, 2020census.gov, in their email signatures. I've been obnoxiously texting family members and friends to remind them how easy it is, and just constantly letting people know how important it is using my voice, social media platforms, et cetera. I think it's important in particular to get in touch with folks that you know, maybe members of your family who represent vulnerable populations, elderly, perhaps depending on their ability status, making sure that they know that this is important and that they can access the resources they need to fill it out. And again, it does take just 5 minutes.
All right, let me squeeze in one more email from a listener named Nathan, who says, I was talking about this issue with one of my friends yesterday who works with asylum seekers, who is one herself, who are scared about how this info will be used. One common topic that keeps coming up in her work and even in my mind is the rhetoric about, quote, finding out who's legal. I'm worried about how this info is going to be used. And now with the recent commentary about discounting those who are not citizens from the count by the president and specifically using data to find illegal aliens, in the words of the president, many of us are worried about how this information will be used. I answer the census, but my friend refuses to do it because no one is talking about, you know, those who are really safe in answering, and will this info be used against us in the future? Jeff, I'll start with you. We got 90 seconds total here. Maybe just some thoughts that Nathan can take back to friends as well on this issue.
Yeah, Title 13 protects every piece of data. We do not ask for citizenship status on the 2020 census. The data can never be used against someone for harm.
Simple as that. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Miguel, what would you say to that emailer?
Yes, I would say I understand that there was some national rhetoric that went around, but I've been assured many times over that this is going to be protected information. We just have to counter the narrative and push hard back against it, that This is very important. The census has always counted citizens and non-citizens since the inception of the census. So we need to make sure everyone gets counted.
And I just want to say to Nathan, I mean, I understand, given the rhetoric from Washington and from this White House, really not, it's really just one person. I mean, it's from the president. But sometimes we take presidential tweets too seriously, and sometimes we don't take them seriously enough. I think this is a case where you can tweet and say whatever you want, but if you don't understand the law and if you don't understand how just sort of the functionality of instruments like the census, you can say what you want, and it is not going to change reality. And that's why we had Jeff Baylor and our guests on here, Nathan, addressing issues like that, and I hope that offers some assurance and, you know, maybe some comfort in this, because I understand it can be really concerning for a lot of people in that position. Good luck to you, and thanks to all of our guests here. Jeff Baylor, the website one more time. People should jump on if they haven't been there yet to finish this off. Where do they go, Jeff?
2020census.gov.
2020census.gov. Good luck to you, Jeff. I know October 31st is your deadline. You got a lot of crew working here. And our rate so far isn't great locally, but we will get there. We'll get there together. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Simeon Bannister from the Community Foundation, among other hats he wears in this community. Always good, sir. Thanks for making time for the program.
My pleasure to be with you.
Miguel Melendez from Ibero-American Action League. Thank you, Miguel.
Thank you for having me.
Anna Liss from Monroe County. Thank you for taking the time for the program, Anna, and I know we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Great conversation.
More connections coming up next.